Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
This is True Crime Cast, Jamie and John on the air guitars.
How are you
every
doing?
Time?
Yeah, man. How are you doing?
Doing really well, man. It's it's amazing outside. It is officially football season. It is, I don't know, just it is a wild time right now in true crime. So many notable trials happening, old cases being revisited. It's just things are fast right now.
Yeah, and we're recording this before Tennessee and Kentucky play this weekend in case Jamie and I need a break from our friendship next week.
I don't think we will. I'm not sure. Well, if you want to know whether or not I'm going to watch the game, you need to listen to last week's Bless Their Heart, where we go into why I will watch the game with John, and it's all about food.
Yeah. Change of plans on that. I forgot I'm like directing a show and I won't be able to watch the game.
So
I take it all back.
So you're not watching the game?
I will be watching the game as I direct a play.
I know what you're in charge of at the play. I feel like it deserves your full attention.
They got it.
John's essentially an armorer. We can't have an Alec Baldwin situation.
Oh, we did. I shouldn't say that. We had a mess up.
Okay.
A bad mess up. No one got killed. It wasn't that bad.
I think I would have probably heard about it if they did, but yeah, it's I encourage you to put your focus there. I'll text you updates about the game. But we do have a great case here today. Been dropping a lot of bonus content, some really cool stuff over on TikTok. Make sure you check that all out. But I want to give a big thank you to a 5-star review that came in. This is from Doughhead453, who I think has written several different reviews, but updates it. And this one says, I can't recommend this podcast enough. Great topics, easy listening, great. Though the new music is a bit unfitting. Over the top, ? Most of our feedback we've gotten has been positive, John. I don't know that it's over the top. Yeah. I feel like it fits our personalities.
Yeah, it does. And yeah, if it is over the top, you know what? Sometimes I'm over the top. Sometimes you're over the top. So
as long as it's not the Rocky top.
Yeah. Yeah. I tried to pitch that. You didn't go for it.
Nope.
Oh, well. You know, can't please everybody. As the older I get, I just realize people have opinions. They're entitled to them. Doesn't mean we have to agree or disagree, but we can still be buddies.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Agreed.
Cool. I'm glad you still listen. Just skip through the music.
A new Patreon member to thank?
Yeah, Rachel came in at the Super Elite Fan or something like that. But Rachel gets to pick her very own topic of conversation. I've sent an email out, and hopefully we can get something on the book soon. And with that level of Patreon membership, Rachel also get to come on the show for a little bit and talk about what made her interested in this case, and we'll just kind of chit-chat for a little bit.
That is the top level of support over there, so very grateful to Rachel for that. And we also put a new episode over there at the end of last week about the mass shooting in 1989 at the Standard Gradure plant in Louisville, Kentucky, so go check that out.
All right, Jamie, any other housekeeping or updates or anything?
I don't think so. There are a lot of case updates. We gave those over on Patreon. We also put them on TikTok, and I don't want to waste any more time here. I'd like to get on into our case.
All right. Well, why don't you get the ball rolling?
On September 16th of 2021, the FBI received an anonymous submission of photos that would lead them into a very gruesome case that we're going to talk about today. These pictures were labeled Cassidy, and they showed a partially nude young woman locked in a cage. Additional photos showed her being killed and dismembered while being bound to a gantry crane, which is something that you usually use to, for example, hang a buck up on after you kill it. So it's usually used for wild game. They knew immediately that this woman was Cassidy Rainwater, who had gone missing from Lebanon, Missouri. Cassidy was known as a fun person to be around. She was a loving lady, very outgoing, big personality. She was a mother of six, and friends said that her children were very special to her, and she did the best she could in showing them love. Cassidy enjoyed spending time on the river, hunting for arrowheads. She also liked writing poetry. She loved to sing. Cassidy was baptized as an adult, and those close to her knew how much that she loved the Lord. So life seemed to be going pretty well for Cassidy as a mother of six, seemed to be trying to do things the way she thought they should be done. And then she went missing. When was she reported missing, John?
Yeah, she was reported missing in August of 2021. So her friend hadn't seen her for approximately 6 weeks. That's a long time, a month and a half or so. The friend said that the last time she saw Cassidy, she was actually with a man named James Phelps. So the police reached out to Phelps, and he said Cassidy had been staying with him until she could get back on her feet. And he hadn't seen Cassidy since July 25th that same year. So James Phelps said that he thought Cassidy had left in the middle of the night to go towards Colorado. Another person listed as a resident of James Phelps' home was Timothy Norton. And when they talked to Timothy Norton, he said that he actually lived in his car because he was an over-the-road trucker. And he said that he used James Phelps' address when he needed one, but police weren't buying this story. I mean, there's one person saying that, yeah, he's a resident, but James is saying, no, I'm not a resident. So stories don't match.
And just suspicious in general about who was the last person to actually see Cassidy and when did she actually, disappear from view of those around her. When those photos arrived at the Dallas County Sheriff's Department before they were sent to the FBI, detectives immediately recognized some items in the photos as things they had seen in the Phelps' backyard when they went to ask about Cassidy. When they brought Phelps in to answer some questions, they searched his phone and found some disturbing evidence. Authorities found messages he exchanged with Norton discussing their plans to kill Cassidy on July 24th, which is, of course, the day before he said he saw Cassidy for the last time. On September the 16th, the same day the photos were received, Phelps was arrested and his property was searched for more evidence about what happened to Cassidy.
According to statements, police found human flesh inside a freezer marked with the date 7/24, July 24th, the day that the phone records were found to have texts exchanged between the two men saying they were going to kill Cassidy. They also discovered skeletal remains on an adjoining property. So these remains were confirmed by the crime lab to be those of Cassidy Rainwater. The flesh from the freezer were also a DNA match for Cassidy. So this is just a horrible nightmare of a situation. These discoveries upgraded the charges against Phelps to that of murder. Phelps, who was 58 years old, and Norton, who was 56 years old, were both charged with first-degree kidnapping, facilitating a felony, inflicting an injury, terrorizing, abandonment of a corpse, and ultimately murder.
Yeah, throw the book at them. Charge them with everything you possibly can. When the FBI got involved, when they got the photos and they interviewed Norton, he confessed immediately and told them everything that happened to Cassidy, what his role was and what Phelps's role was. He said that Phelps had asked him, who was Norton again, to come over and kill Cassidy, who was sleeping on his living room floor. Norton said when he got to the house, he held Cassidy's legs down while Phelps strangled her and put a bag over her head. After the 33-year-old woman was dead, Norton and Phelps carried the body outside. And that's when Norton said that Phelps bound her to the gantry crane where he started dismembering Cassidy's body. Again, a gruesome scene, and just saying these things out loud is very uncomfortable. And this was happening to such a wonderful lady. Norton said that he helped Phelps carry Cassidy's body parts in the house to put her in the bathtub. Dallas County Sheriff said that neither man showed any remorse for what happened. They were just telling a story as if they were telling a story about going hunting or what happened at work that day.
So the first hearing for Phelps was in November of 2021, and Norton had confessed that he and Phelps would search for potential victims online at a nearby Walmart. And Phelps got a new public defender, and that would be in early 2022. And this person was more experienced in defending death penalty cases. And as kind of expected, in July 2022, Phelps did enter a plea of not guilty. And then just a few months later, in September of 2022, prosecutors did file an intent to seek the death penalty against Phelps in this case if he was convicted of murder.
Yeah, we go back and forth, John, and not go back and forth. I mean, we discuss the death penalty fairly often, and we've done that recently with the Robert Roberson case that we covered over on True Crime to Go. We discussed the Maurice Williams execution in Missouri just a couple of months ago, and this is one of those cases where I publicly have said I do not support the death penalty, but I'm not really losing sleep over them pursuing it with Phelps. And as we know, John, he was in a relationship with Cassidy. So what went wrong to lead him to decide to kill her instead of just continuing that relationship?
This is just an awful case. Like I don't know that we're skipping anything, but like the torture and the trauma that she went through, we could spend an hour talking about that, but just know that it was brutal.
Yeah. And that's generally not something we do here, but it is a good point to note that, John, that this was not a quick situation for her. And this was not something that they did on a whim and then moved on from. This was very intentional, and this was very deliberate and dragged out. Norton also entered a plea of not guilty, and we know that he was the first to confess and point the finger at Phelps. So oftentimes we'll see somebody get a deal for that. However, in February of 2022, court documents showed that Norton had child pornography and pornography of a violent nature in his home. Not that you can get much worse than violent murder and dismemberment, but he continues to confirm his status as a pretty bad, bad human.
Well,
and I don't often say, but usually it's about the behavior, but at some point that's who you are.
Yeah. I mean, I think that does show that he is definitely a sexual deviant, and he has this strong, overwhelming urge sexually that defies morality and the law. So I think that shows what kind of motivation would lead him to abducting a female and brutally murdering her.
And he saw this evidence stacking up against him in addition to his confession and the physical evidence found at Phelps' home. And in January of 2023, Norton changed his plea to guilty to the first-degree murder charge. Phelps entered an Alford plea, which is a type of guilty plea where a defendant maintains their innocence but acknowledges there's sufficient evidence for a conviction. So essentially that is saying, some people would call it a no contest. Yes, there's enough evidence to convict me, so I know I'm going to be convicted, but I still didn't do it. And he did that primarily to avoid the death penalty. And John, we often see this after somebody is sentenced and there are some appeals happening to get to that Alford plea. It's not often that we see it happen on the front end of the sentencing.
Yeah, I feel like it's a way to take the death penalty off the table. And basically you're pleading guilty in this guy's situation, but call it an Alford plea if you want to. Basically, he's going to be in prison for the rest of his life without the possibility of parole, even though he didn't say, yeah, I'm guilty.
Right. And I wonder what that process is for the family, because you know the family wants to hear what really happened. And if somebody's going to go to prison for it, and especially if they're taking the death penalty off the table, maybe you want to hear them say, yeah, I did it. So I don't know. What do you think? And of course, maybe they didn't want to sit through the trial and be re-traumatized. I get that too. Maybe this was their way of saying he's going away forever. He's being punished. Let's move past the trial part.
Yeah. I mean, if the state were to say, you know what, we're not going to accept this Alford plea, we're going to go to jury trial and we're going to pursue the death penalty. Is it awful for me to say I'm happy that it landed with an Alford plea? I wish that it would have been guilty, certainly that. But at the end of the day, he's going to be in jail for the rest of his life. He's going to never, ever be allowed to possibly get parole. And in the long run, does it save the state bukus of money because you're not going to through all the appeals and a jury trial and all the appeals that would come after the conviction if the death? So it's like we get what we want and we save a lot of money and there is justice in a different way. So
I would hope they got the families okay with this. I know they're usually involved as we've talked to Jared Ferrantino about that being part of the process, but I would just really hate for this to happen. And look, I don't care if the state saves money. I hope they have more money to give justice to everybody. So if this helps somebody else get justice and the family's okay with this, I'm fine with it. But
I know that sounds cold-hearted to me, but
it's legitimate.
It is what it is.
It's a big concern.
And at the end of the day, he will never see the light of day again. And that's what I'm okay with.
But that was not the end of the legal discussion with this case. When we get back from the break, we'll talk about civil suits that were filed and what else we found at the crime scene.
So the property where Cassidy was brutally murdered, it actually burned down in October of 2021, not long after Norton and Phelps were arrested. So they sent in a bomb squad to investigate. And I don't know that there was like a bomb there as much as they just kind of wanted to see what caused the fire. Does that make sense? But they did investigate it and they filed a report and they found that the fire was set by two devices that were made with mortar tubes, balloons, and a coiled fuse with a tripwire attached. So I was wrong. It definitely was a bomb-like device that caused this fire.
Yeah.
So the fire marshals classified this as a second-degree arson case. And it's interesting. Who's responsible for that?
Yeah, I have to think it was Phelps. There's no reason to believe that it would have been anybody else. Phelps and or Norton. And set this just, up to, yeah.
Why not just pour gas on it and light a match? You went through the effort of making
There's a chance that, and I'm just speculating, I don't know for certain, because we still don't know the motive. That was never released. But if they were arrested quickly and didn't know the police were onto them or whatever, which, of course, we know that Norton confessed, maybe they set this up in case we get caught. This is going to burn evidence when people come to search the property. I don't know. That's the only thing I could think of. But we also don't know what set it off. Was it an animal? Was it somebody else on the property? The fire didn't start while police were there, as far as we know.
Let me ask you a question, Jamie. This is what they did to Cassidy was brutal and awful. And I think it really went on to show that they had no regard for human life.
At all.
This wasn't a spur of the moment impulse. This was intentional
and planned.
I mean, is the likelihood that this was their very first victim and they did it so terribly that they got caught, or could there be others?
That was exactly where my mind was going as well, John. And usually people aren't very efficient at murder in their first time, given they were two men with a woman who was being held captive and was no doubt not at her best when they decided to brutally kill her. But I would not be surprised at all if there wasn't at least some other type of violent act. Maybe this was their first murder, but they had hurt people before. Because you don't just all of a sudden wake up and be like, I'm okay killing people and I'm not going to feel bad about it. That's not something that humans do, right?
Yeah, I mean, we see that all the time with serial killers, that their first one is sloppy and not as efficient as they want it to be, and then they clean it up and are more. It's like precision work after that. It's awful.
We also don't know where the pictures came from. They were sent to the police. They were sent to the FBI, but they were on the phones of these guys while they were doing it. Did Norton send them? I mean, neither of them show guilt. So how did somebody else get a hold of these photos to send them in? And would they have been caught if it wasn't for the photos? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like that was the kind of the tipping point in the investigation.
There was a wrongful death lawsuit that was filed, and it was awarded $30 million to be paid to Cassidy Rainwater's children in a civil suit. Now, this was to be paid by Phelps and Norton. I know very little about them. I can't imagine that they had $30 million, but we also know in these civil suits that most of the time they're not paid out at all, because you can pay such a minimal amount, 30 bucks a month, 100 bucks a month until you die, which is never going to get close to that, just to make it go away. And they may have been able to seize some property and sell that to give to the kids. I think the kids deserve anything they get, but it just, I always feel bad reporting that they got this huge settlement when I know they're not going to see much of it at all. The lawsuit said Cassidy Rainwater suffered excruciating physical injuries and emotional distress between the time of the initial injury at the hands of defendant Norton and until the time of her eventual death. Plaintiffs are entitled to recover fair and reasonable damages for such time of suffering. As a direct and proximate result of the aforementioned acts, the plaintiffs have suffered the loss of services, consortium, companionship, comfort, instruction, guidance, counsel, training, and support by reason of the death. They also suffered pecuniary losses, all by reason of the death, and the amount in excess of $25,000. Like I said, if there was any property that was able to be sold, that's where they're going to be able to get it. But of course, we know the home was burned down. If they do start getting wages while they're in prison, then those will be garnered and transferred to the kids. So there's a chance of minimal payment of this $30 million, but never going to touch that number. The judgment also allows the kids to apply for payment from the Missouri Tort Victims Compensation Fund. Now, this is a fund that exists to help compensate those who have been injured due to negligence or recklessness of another, and who have been unable to obtain full compensation because the party at fault had no insurance, no adequate insurance, or has filed for bankruptcy or other reasons specified by the law. This was a fund set up in 1987, and it's generated by a portion of the money paid as punitive damages in lawsuits in Missouri. So when people are given fines for various violations, part of that money goes into this Missouri Tort Victims Compensation Fund in order to help pay people who deserve compensation because somebody hurt them when that person can't pay on their own behalf. So I've not heard of a lot of states having this kind of setup. And again, it's not going to get close to $30 million, but it will help, I think. And I love that this is set up. And if all states don't have this, I hope they get on board with it.
More than 3 years after her death, Cassidy Rainwater's family were finally able to lay her to rest. And one of her sons spoke during her memorial, and one of the boys said, "Think about the memories and just how great they were. She always loved the river. It was her favorite place. I remember her always singing to me as a baby. She was a great person. She was the hardest working mom that I've ever known, and I'm so proud of her, and I wish I could know her today." So, yeah, Cassidy, her life was taken at the hands of monsters. And I, for some reason, Jamie, I get the feeling that this is not the last we're going to hear these guys' names, James Phelps. And then of course, Norton. I've been trying to research like who they were in their childhoods and their lives that led them to become monsters. And I haven't found anything concrete. I found some speculations. But when we find out if we find out there's any more to this case or there's other victims at their hands, then we will be sure to let you know.
And here's the issue with why it's harder to find is that we didn't have a full trial here. Both of them essentially pled guilty. So a lot of the testimony was just for sentencing. So we don't know as much about them as we would had the trials played out in full, like we see in a lot of the trials happening right now. I've been watching a lot of the Sarah Boone trial. She took the stand on her own behalf. She was found guilty of killing her boyfriend by zipping him up in a suitcase.
I've been seeing so many TikToks about like her like reenacting how she got him in the suitcase and stuff. That's intriguing.
Yeah, and her whole demeanor. I think she was going to be found guilty anyway, but I believe that her testimony, as it often does with defendants, made it a lot worse.
Yeah, and for these guys, like if they would have went to trial, I think part of that is often, are they competent enough to stand trial? They didn't try to do the insanity route, but if they would have, that would have allowed psychologists, psychiatrists to get in there and really understand who these guys were. And that's a good point. They didn't do that because they both just avoided the trial altogether.
And as we know, these guys did not show any remorse of any kind whatsoever. So when people are pleading insanity or claiming to have not be mentally capable of standing trial, I don't know that they would have had a shot. They knew what they were doing, but the lack of remorse certainly is a giant red flag that tells me that there are things in their childhood. We could go back and talk about the McDonald triad of common themes of serial killers, that being harm to animals, arson, and then bedwetting beyond a reasonable age. We don't know that about these guys, but I would almost be shocked if it wasn't present in some way.
Yeah. It's this is interesting. Speaking of TikTok, I did remember reading that there were rumors in the town up there in Missouri that these guys were posting videos on TikTok and selling meat from a human to people who wanted to consume that. We didn't include that in the main episode. Of course, those videos are, I don't know that they exist anymore. Hopefully they don't.
And I think other
people were posting those rumors on their TikToks. Not that these guys were posting TikToks. I said that incorrectly, but is there, you know, they found some of her inside their freezer. So there is a possibility that what we think happened, while we know it was bad, there's a chance that it was even worse than what we know for sure.
Again, I think that would have come out at trial, but the fact that there was flesh in the freezer, I don't know. It doesn't guarantee cannibalism, but I think it leans strongly in that direction. I don't remember that we've ever seen, of course, we've seen people hide bodies in freezers and just try to hide evidence in that way. But I don't know that we've ever seen somebody preserve remains in this way when they weren't also consuming them that I remember.
Yeah, I was going to say, I do remember some where human remains were found in the refrigerator. And in those cases, it was because of cannibalism. You know, that just takes things to a whole different level with these guys. Like, the sexual motivation is what we typically see. But then after that, if there is a motivation to eat human flesh, like, this is one of the most evil cases that we've discussed. And I wish that we did know more. But, Jamie, I was thinking, and I'm just going to kind of run down this rabbit hole for a minute. I hope that we never experience the tragic loss of one of our children. I hope that's something only we have to imagine. But what, you know, put yourself in her family shoes. Like, what brings you the most, do you get closure just by these two confessing, whether that be through the Alford or the guilty plea? I don't know that you get any more closure going through a trial and hearing the brutality.
Right.
I almost think that if something like this were to happen, maybe the best case scenario for me and my long-term mental health is the plea deal and knowing that they're never going to see the light of day again, but not having to hear everything that my loved one went through. Maybe ignorance truly is bliss in that regard.
Yeah. And I mean, we can simplify this and make it sound like, yes, she was killed. They were seeking justice, but this isn't the only thing going on with this situation for them. As far as they knew, she was missing up until she wasn't, right? So locating her and then finding out what happened, being able to lay her to rest, like we mentioned, are all parts of the moving pieces of what's going on in their lives. So to think that they're only focused on what happens with these two guys is, I think, a bit short-sighted on anybody's behalf that believes that. But I think you're probably right. Who does it help to relive it if they are going to be held responsible to the extent of the law anyway?
She was missing for 6 weeks before the call was made to police to report her missing. That is a long time. We often talk about the first 48 hours and how critically important those are. It's almost a miracle in my mind that we even sat here today with closure after she was gone for so long. So we sometimes talk about police botched an investigation and we sound like we hate the police. That's the opposite of the truth. And kudos to the authorities for finding everyone so quickly when she was reported missing a month and a half after she initially went missing.
And we can absolutely speculate of what may have happened before this with Phelps and Norton, but I almost guarantee that if they got away with it, this wouldn't be the last time.
Yeah. So that I can almost say that with 100% certainty.
So lives were saved by this being solved. And I do think there's some, I don't know, gratification to law enforcement for being able to solve this before other people could be hurt. I just want to go back to one other thing you said before we change gears there, of this being sexually motivated and then resulting in cannibalism. Thinking about those other cases that we did talk about, we're talking about Jeffrey Dahmer, Nathaniel Bar-Jonah, Willie Picton, these guys that we are pretty sure consumed their victims. All their initial attacks and murders were sexually motivated, and I think there's some tie to the consumption as part of that sexual motivation. So I don't know that that's as far removed as we would like to think as far as motivations go. So I do think that was probably part of the equation here. Now, hopefully they were caught before they ever got to do that. I didn't want them to get any sort of gratification or seeming reward from this, but I do think it was probably part of what happened, and we'll probably never know. And given the fact that nobody else was hurt, we know who did it and they're never coming out of prison, I think I'm going to be okay with that this time.
Absolutely. What else do we want to talk about with this one, Jamie?
I think that about wraps it up. It's, you know, I the one thing I really would like to know is who sent the pictures in. Was it Norton? Did he secretly feel some kind of remorse, or was it somebody else that got a hold of one of their phones? We know he had a bunch of pornography in his home. Did somebody, and he also had a separate home that he had stuff in that wasn't Phelps's house. So did somebody else find this and turn it in? I feel like that person is somewhat of a hero. So thanks to whoever sent that in, unless it was Norton, then you're not a hero. You're still a coward, but I'm glad you sent it in.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
It is.
Too far?
Nope. Guys, we appreciate everything that you do to support the show, from the comments to the ratings, to the reviews and subscribing. It is not unnoticed. We also released a really interesting case over on Patreon, this past Friday. So go check that out if you haven't already. If you're not a subscriber, you should check it out. We have, golly, man, I say 7 all the time, but we're going on 8 years now of content that will be over on Patreon for $3 a month. That is a bargain.
And we're thinking about making some of those episodes a la carte. So if there's just one you're interested in, you can just go and download that one for a nominal fee. We're not trying to get rich off this, but Patreon is where we do get support to keep the lights on. So go follow us on social media for updates about that. Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok primarily. Don't get on the Twitter box as much as I used to, but TikTok is where we're most active. So we'd love to have you follow us over there.
Guys, we appreciate it. And until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.